Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast. I'm Dave Richmond. Ladies and gentlemen, Kyle from LaGrange Barber. How are you?
What's going on, Dave? I'm getting ready to hit you with a Russian sickle.
Well, I was going to say, I understand there's going to be a, by the way, folks, stay with us because later in the show, we actually have a steel cage match between Pirate Al and Kyle from LaGrange Barber. That's coming up towards the end of the card. So we'll be doing that. We have Nikita Koloff, the Russian Nightmare. And we'll have him later in the show. But Bubba, right now, we have a very special guest.
Yeah, with the national championship game being played tonight between Gonzaga and Baylor, wanting to have Coach Matt back on. I'm very excited to welcome you back on, Coach. How are you?
I'm good. I've been having a ball. Great games, men's and women's. And obviously, we always branch off into the NASCAR at some point in time. But love this time of year. And looking forward to tonight's game. I don't know that it can live up to the semifinal game that we saw, but I'm looking forward to it. The two best teams in the country all year are playing for the championship. That's how it should be.
Coach, hey, did you call this back when we had you on? It seemed like you were either Steele did, one of the two, called Gonzaga Baylor for the national championship. I mean, I guess a lot of people were saying that, but did you call this?
No.
A couple weeks ago? Okay, you didn't? All right, well, then it was Steele.
No, I had Gonzaga, but the Baylor thing, I thought they had struggled a little bit when they came back off of the pause. I wasn't sure that they were going to score enough regularly enough to make it, but they've certainly proven me wrong. And like I said, for the bulk of the year, these have been the best two teams. So let's do this. Okay.
Fortunately, one of Coach Mack's final four teams did not happen, that being the North Carolina Tar Heels. I know you said you were kind of going out on a limb there, Coach, and we'll certainly talk about the Tar Heels more here in a few minutes as Roy Williams has obviously stepped down and Hubert Davis is the new leader there in Chapel Hill.
Yeah.
Did we lose Coach there?
No, I'm sorry. I didn't realize that was the end of the statement. I apologize.
I thought I left. I was like, man, I left Dave speechless.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on the hire, Coach? North Carolina hiring Hubert Davis.
I think it's a good hire. I think he went there 8 years ago, 9 years ago now, to do this. He left a very good job with ESPN. But I think this has been his goal the whole time. And I don't think he was promised the job, but I think it was implied that if he came back there and the program was headed in the right direction, that he could be the choice. And when it opened the other day, I said it'll either be Hubert Davis, or if they don't think if they think the lack of experience is an issue being the head coach, then they'll go to Wes Miller. But I didn't think it would go past those two, and that turned out to be the case.
So what they did was they looked past the experience factor. They rewarded the guy for following a path and being loyal, huh?
Yeah. And they weren't,
isn't it?
They were never going outside the family. They interviewed two guys who didn't play there, Haas and Steve Robinson, both with head coaching experience. But I think that was probably more of a courtesy to those guys, although I'm sure they were doing their due diligence too. But I think they could have made the announcement at the press conference where Roy walked away if they had wanted to, and going ahead and giving it to Hubert. And the game has changed, guys. He is going to have to learn on the fly, but a whole lot of people are learning on the fly because the game is different with what we talked about off the air, the transfer portal and the NIL coming up. College basketball is going to be different. If you're a college basketball fan and you don't like change, you are not going to be happy the next few years.
Well, here's the thing. Another thing too that comes to mind is that nothing wrong with Hubert Davis. They did a little, like Kyle said, they basically did the Bill Guthridge of 2021, where, Coach Smith didn't give him any time really to hire anybody for a search in October. It was late, or August or September, whatever it was. It was late in the game, so to speak, for that season. But they did the same thing. The thing about Wes Miller, though, is he's only 38 years old. He took a program at UNCG, and they're going to the tournament all the time. I mean, he does, He fits every single box. So it could be a situation. We'll see how Hubert Davis works out. But if he doesn't, then I guess that everybody would want the Carolina job, I would imagine.
Did you know that Dave is actually Wes Miller's agent?
I didn't, but I got to tell you, I didn't know Wes Miller when he was a player. I knew of him, obviously, but I've done several of their television games, gotten to watch him practice. He's a real deal now. He is really good. I like Wes Miller a lot, and the job he's done at Greensboro, which isn't one of the easier jobs in the Southern Conference, not one of the traditional quote unquote powers in the Southern Conference, and he has made it one of the top programs annually, and got to give him a lot of credit. He's done a good job, and he'll be getting another major job offer pretty soon. I feel confident. Maybe not this season, maybe not this go around, but he's going to get a job.
I want to get your take on this old news, a week old now with Jaden Gardner, but I know being a former men's basketball coach at East Carolina, you know how hard that job is. Do you think this is a situation where it'll be like, I call it free agency, where we basically reload with like 8 or 10 guys every single year, or is this just a short-term thing?
Well, first of all, I hate that Jaden is leaving, because he's been such a good player and he's been such a good citizen here. He has contributed in a lot of ways, and I hate that they weren't able to surround him with enough players for him to like what he probably will get to do now, go play in the postseason somewhere. But I think rosters are going to change, and I think one thing that Joe Dooley is built for, you know, I'm a big fan, but I think he's built to do these kind of things. An influx of new players and putting them together and getting them to play hard. I think this is right up Joe's alley. So I think the changes that are coming are something that fit Joe Dooley's skill set and may end up being a positive for East Carolina basketball.
One thing I talked to the guys about, Mike Steele about, and the concerns to me about the timing of Jaden leaving is coming up on year 4 of coach's contract next year. And, without Jaden, it makes it a lot harder on coach to post a winning season. And, you were in the business for a long time. Year 4 is a big deal of a 5-year contract. What do you think? I mean, you don't know what's inside the head of John Gilbert, but what do you think coach needs to do next year to make sure he gets that coveted extension?
Yeah, the weird thing is when you look at the numbers with Joe's record and that kind of thing and league play and historically the numbers at ECU, it's not a real pretty picture. But, I still don't get that feel. I feel like everybody here in Greenville and the ECU community kind of think we're headed in the right direction.
Yeah.
And I have that feeling myself. The teams, while the record doesn't show it, there's no question. You guys have seen it. They've been more competitive night in and night out than they have at ECU basketball in a long time. That being said, You still have to win, and they have given Joe more resources than any coach who's ever been here, and I'm thankful for that. I know he's thankful for that. So if you give the resources up and you've got the new practice facility going, last year obviously wasn't a year where we can measure whether there's the community support and that kind of thing, but I think it's still pretty positive right now, and every coach is every year can be on the hot seat. But I still think folks believe in Joe Dooley and what he's doing, and I know I do. I really honestly do, and I would tell you if I did.
Dave, you're on mute.
Okay, thank you. I hit it twice, apparently. I was going to say, Coach, he hasn't lost the locker room and he hasn't lost the fan base that I can tell everybody that I talk to that knows Pirate basketball. There's some fans that look at the record, but they don't keep up with the program. The fans that like see the box score or they see that and they don't understand the ins and outs of the program. They may be the ones that, say, how come your coach hasn't won or something like, or the same thing with Coach Mike Houston, which is crazy, They don't pay attention to what's going on with the insides of the program, that you got to build it from literally for basketball from scratch, and Coach Houston had to start all over again.
Sure. No, I agree with that exactly. And, you know, a couple things that are key when you're deciding about keeping coaches and that kind of thing, not particular to Joe's situation, like you mentioned, but he certainly has not lost the locker room whatsoever. They play hard. Nobody can question the effort that these guys are given and the preparation that they go through. They're well coached. It's just a matter of having enough weapons out there, and each year there have been more weapons. So I still think they're trending in the right direction. Again, hate that Gardner's leaving, but you know, that'll be another option. That'll be another availability for somebody to step up and show their talents.
Coach, we need a 3-point. We need 3-point shooting desperately. Yeah. That's what we need.
You know, guys, and tell me this: if you all have noticed this in the tournament, defense is so darn good. In order just to score a basket, you have to make a special play. You have to execute offensively, or you have to make a contested shot. And boy, when you go recruiting, you've got to keep that in mind. You know, it takes a special person to score in today's game at the highest level. I think the defense in the tournament has just been incredible.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And you look at UCLA and the run that Mick Cronin's club had. And going into the tournament, I know David Glenn, when we had him on, he made the prediction about Syracuse. UCLA was a team. I did not have them going to the Final Four in my bracket. I think I had them maybe the Sweet 16. But they were a team I was keeping an eye on because I knew they had started the year extremely hot before struggling a bit there in conference play.
Yeah, and they did, and it was easy to not keep up with them. They had a stretch where they lost four in a row and kind of disappeared off the radar. But you know, and they lost a lot of good players before the season even started to transfer and moving on to the pros and that kind of thing. They had some more talent on that team, and of course nobody really knew how the transfer from Kentucky was going to come back in and you know how he was going to be, but. Clearly, they're something special. But I imagine more people had them losing in the first round than winning in the first round when they were going to play Michigan State in the first four.
Coach, I wanted to ask you about that program. UCLA looks like they're heading in the right direction. But what about another one? Indiana comes to mind. There's some blue bloods that have really struggled. UCLA had a nice run this year, so maybe they're heading in the right direction. I love their coach. What do you think about Indiana? How did they get back up to the? I hate to say Bobby Knight because that might be that's an expectation that's extremely high. But I mean, that's what we're here for, right? I mean, nobody's saying we're just going to be mediocre in our conference. You want the Indiana fans, I know, have high expectations, and they really should.
Yeah, and as good as the Big Ten was this year, that's going to be a steep climb for them. But, you know, Mike Woodson, very well respected as an NBA assistant. I think bringing Thad Matta in is brilliant. Bringing Dane Fife in is a really good move. These are guys who have gotten it done at the highest levels. But it's still going to be an uphill climb. They can do a really good job and still not make an impact because some programs have become really well established in that league. And look at the depth of the talent in that league. But again, with the transfer portal, you can lose a lot of players in a hurry, but you can also gain a lot of players in a hurry. And Indiana is still an attractive name.
Yeah, no doubt, Coach. If you look at the national championship game between Baylor and Gonzaga, how do you break that down? Who do you think has the edge?
Well, again, Baylor's defense is so good that if they shoot the ball like they did the other night, that it's going to be a great game. They have not done that consistently since coming back off COVID. Gonzaga has continued to be consistent, even though UCLA played great the other night and shot the ball extremely well. Gonzaga has shot under 50% one time this whole season. They had 36 points in the paint in the first half against UCLA the other night. I know that Baylor can throw a bunch of big bodies at Timmy in the middle, but Gonzaga has just so many offensive weapons. I was surprised that the line was only 4 and I was a little surprised at the under over 2, but I hope we see a classic game, but I think Gonzaga is built for this, and I think they're going to finish the journey and be the best team since 1976, or the only undefeated team since 1976 in Indiana. Ironically, that was my first year as a full-time assistant coach at Virginia Tech, and we played them in the Indiana Classic that year with Quinn Buckner and Wilkerson and Abernathy and May and Benson. What a starting five that was.
Yeah, Coach, expanding on those two areas that you mentioned as far as defensively, I think Baylor is forcing something like 17 turnovers a game, and Gonzaga's forcing nearly 15. And then shooting the basketball, you're talking about the Zags just being under 50% one time this year. From the floor, they're shooting 55% as a team. I think they're about 37% from three, which certainly isn't bad. That ranks in the top 40 or 50 in the country. And then Baylor, the way they shoot the three ball, They are top in the nation, 42%, and that's even more impressive when you consider they shoot 25 per game.
Yeah, I think the two stats tonight to look at, they're going to be pretty consistent with the numbers that you talked about. But the two stats to look at are turnovers. That has really bitten some good teams in this tournament, just to have a flurry of turnovers and those get converted into easy baskets on the other end. The other thing I think is foul trouble, that Gonzaga is a little vulnerable there. They don't have quite the depth. Baylor really has a lot of good players coming off the bench. They have so many players, I can't name some of the players coming off the bench that can come in and contribute, especially on the defense, and they're extremely good, although they've got some folks that can knock down shots too. But if Gonzaga were to get into foul trouble, that might be something that Baylor could seize upon and pull the upset.
Another area to keep an eye on is rebounding. Baylor, I think, ranks something like 280th or 90th in rebounding. So it will be interesting to see if the Zags are able to clean the glass and make some hay there.
Yeah, just like turnovers, rebounding, especially offensive rebounding, are it's a place where you can get those extra possessions. And I know there are some coaches that don't really believe in the correlation between rebounding and winning. I'm not one of them. I do believe in the correlation between rebounding and winning basketball games.
Coach, with the it's kind of like the guys are big football fans, college football fans. This kind of reminds me of, even though we had the tournament like the BCS, because these were the two best teams, and we're getting the two best teams for the national championship game.
Yeah, interesting that it comes down to a couple of church schools, too, a Jesuit school and a Baptist school. Who would have thought we'd have seen this, 6 months ago when we started this journey? And I am tickled. Yes, we don't mention it enough, although we have talked about it in the past on some podcasts. The fact that we got all these games in and we got to the championship game, yeah. What a credit it is to everybody that was involved, especially somebody that they don't get too much credit at all, but the training staffs at these schools, the medical staff at these schools, everybody did a great job to get us to this point.
Coach, let's talk about these two coaches. Mark Few, he's been at Gonzaga for a little over two decades now, and then you have Scott Drew at Baylor, who's been there nearly two decades. I think this is year 18 for him. It's so refreshing to see Mark Few after the success he's had there in Spokane, making the tournament every single year and, having the opportunity now to play for the national title for a second time, and him being so loyal to that university.
Yeah, you think about the Blue Bloods, and we've talked about the off year that they had in general, but Gonzaga is the winningest program in the country over the last 10 years. I don't know that you could win a bet saying that, but certainly what he has done in a different kind of community, and not a destination of any sort of way, what they've done with that commitment, and he takes on all comers. They've announced next year's opening game is against Duke in Las Vegas. And Coach Drew, and I don't know Coach Drew or Coach Few very well at all, but he inherited maybe a program in the worst shape of any thing in the country. It was, a player had killed another player. They had all kind of stuff going on. And look where they are today. And they didn't just arrive on the scene. They have built this thing and built this thing and built this thing. And what an incredible journey that both of these coaches have been on.
Yeah, if we were able to play the tournament last year with the season Baylor had, who knows, that they could be playing for back-to-back national titles.
Yeah, no doubt.
Really good point.
I was going to thank you, Bubba. I was thinking about that. Coach, with all the – when it's all said and done, are you going to go with the Zags? I'm going to put you on the spot, or the Baylor Bears?
Well, I haven't gotten much right, but I have had the Zags all the way. So I'm going to go ahead and say I think they finished the deal tonight. I really do.
Well, it hasn't happened in a long time, as we're talking about, since 76, to have an undefeated school. And they, I mean, they blue bloods, whatever you want to say, they looked way, way, way better than everybody else. Maybe Baylor would be the only one.
Guys. You know, we don't know all these guys all the time till they get to the tournament, but they've got four or five NBA guys in the starting lineup, including the precocious point guard who is just, you know, he is just a special guy.
No doubt about it. It's going to be a lot of fun, Coach. And I know that one final thing for you I want to ask you is that we were talking about the transfer portal and the free agency, if you will. It's got to be a guy like you that does a lot of games. It's got to make it even harder for you because, you know, you got like the 3 or 4 years where you get used to. John Smith has been there for 3 or 4 years, and he's getting ready to be a senior coach. What do you think? And you've had 3 years to look at a body of work, and now you might get John Smith's 1 or 2 years now.
Yeah, it is crazy, but it's hardest on the coaches who have to deal with that, and then the fans who just don't feel like they're really connected and have a lot of continuity with the program. And fans are going to have to readjust. If you're listening, you're going to have to readjust your fandom.
No doubt about it. And before we let you go, how about tell everybody about your book? I said MacMcCarthy.com, right?
I can tell you that Dave Richmond has not reviewed it yet because he hasn't read it yet.
I told you. I knew you were going to tell me this afternoon. I knew you were going to tell me.
But, yeah, we have a few left at MacMcCarthy.com. Jump on in there. We have some stragglers, you know, picking up a book here and there. And it has, even if it's self-serving, it has had good reviews. I think if you're a basketball fan, especially an East Carolina basketball fan, you might enjoy it.
Hey, and Coach, I know you had a second one that was at least being thought of, if not in the works. So bring us up to date. What's the status of that?
Yeah, still to be determined. I want to see if I can see how much money I can not lose on this one first.
And the working title for the second one is 50 Shades of McCarthy.
I like it. Can I write that down?
Write it down. Go ahead.
Thanks.
All right, you'll be in the acknowledgments page, Kyle.
Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, Coach, very much. We'll see how the game turns out tonight. I'm looking forward to it at 9 o'clock on CBS. Appreciate you, my friend, and look forward to having you back on. Maybe next time we can talk some NASCAR.
I can't wait. Thanks, guys.
All right, thanks Coach. Appreciate you very much. Well, here's a very special moment of the show where we give you a lot of ECU stuff, but now we have a guy that I've looked up into and admired for a long, long time. And Bubba Rosenbaum, we're going to educate you on some wrestling tonight.
Sounds good. I've been waiting for this, Dave. I knew you and Kyle would get me cultured.
No doubt about it. I'll tell you what, there's one thing that most people, my parents didn't know until the statute of limitations were over, but my grandfather used to let me stay up at 11:30 at night on a Saturday night to watch NWA Mid-Atlantic Wrestling back then. I fell in love with the sport. And with us right now, we have Nikita Koloff, the Russian Nightmare. How are you, Nikita?
I'm wonderful, guys. Great to be with the Sports Objective. Hey, Bubba Rosenbaum, that'd be a great wrestling name right there, Bubba.
I appreciate that, Nikita. Yeah, back when I played high school football, and then I went on to play small college football as well. But in high school, I guess it was maybe my junior year, one of the local television stations, they did an all-name team, and I think I was number two.
That's it. Just a quick curiosity question. Small college, who'd you play with? Who'd you play for?
I finished up at Averett University in Danville, Virginia.
Okay. I was just curious because I played small college myself. First JUCO, junior college, and then Morehead State University in Minnesota.
Okay.
And we always won NAI Division I, but we were, NCAA Division II.
Gotcha.
Nikita, yep. you were trying to get on in the USFL, weren't you, when you ended up getting into wrestling, correct?
Yeah, I was actually training for that. You know, my hopes, I had a couple setbacks back in the college days. My freshman year, I would imagine your viewers, your listeners, your audience probably familiar with when Lawrence Taylor broke Joe Theismann's leg in the game, the Theismann fracture.
Yep.
And I predated Joe. I suffered that my freshman year, my right leg, rehabilitated, came back, played three more years, only to fracture my tibia fibula, my left leg, my senior year, while being scouted by the NFL. But I was determined to come back again. And then I had lined up a tryout with the USFL. And ironically, real quick, two guys playing for that team I would have met prior to wrestling were a guy named Lex Luger and Ron Simmons. They were both on the Tampa Bay Bandits. Wow. And lo and behold, damn. I didn't meet him through football, but I met him through wrestling.
Well, Ron Simmons, all man. I mean, nothing against Lex, too.
All man. I mean, my gosh, right? Setting records as a freshman left and right. Only guy I think that Florida State ever retired his jersey, right? Bobby Bowden?
Yeah, I'm not sure about that. I know his jersey was retired at Florida State, but
I think he's the only one. I'm not positive, but I think he's the only one.
What did you think? I mean, we're jumping around now, but what did you think when they brought him in? He was already in WCW, but what did you think when they put him under the hood and teamed him with Butch Reed as Doom? I loved the team, but I didn't get putting him under a hood.
Yeah, that was destined for Doom. I mean, he could have been utilized a whole better way, but you know, at the time, some of the bookings, some of the bookers had limited knowledge of professional wrestling. With Ted, and I know we are kind of jumping around, we can get focused on whatever direction you want to go, but when Ted Turner bought it from Jim Crockett Promotions and it became Corporate America, transferred from mom and pop to Corporate America. And it just became a chapter in Turner's portfolio.
Yeah.
And he hired guys that really didn't obviously know a whole lot about wrestling, or WCW might still be around.
Yeah, I know. Obviously, your biggest run was in Jim Crockett Promotions. I guess it was 85 when you started for JCP?
1984.
84, wow. Okay. And they paired you with Ivan. Just so you know, Dave and I both know our new Ivan. We're both in the Winterville, North Carolina area, Greenville, that area. Where
Ivan lived. Yeah.
And we knew Ivan, you know, relatively well. And so what was it like for you breaking in? Ivan had been everywhere, done everything, been WWF champion. How beneficial was that for you breaking in as a young guy and being on the road with Ivan, being paired with him and being able to learn from him?
I mean, great question. I mean, it was really priceless. You can't put a price on it, because for those who don't know my story, I'm training for the pro football tryout. I get a random phone call from a friend of mine who wrestled as Road Warrior Animal. And the irony is I had literally recruited Animal out of high school, Irondale High School, New Brighton, Minnesota, to play junior college football with me. He went on to Morehead State with me, but then he dropped out. I continued on to graduate. Next thing I know, he's on the Superstation TBS as a road warrior, and he's the one who literally called me, and if you want to say recruited me into professional wrestling. And then I got teamed up with Uncle Ivan, who, I mean, as you already noted, had a stellar career already, and I was able to help extend that career. Yes. But to glean knowledge from him was invaluable. It was priceless.
Did you guys? I'm assuming you guys rode together a lot. So what was it? You know, obviously in the ring you learned from him, but I imagine you picked up even more just riding with him, hearing road stories, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, because I had, you know, when I broke in, it's a unique story because I told Jim Crockett the day I called him. You know, there was no cell phones in those days. There was no sending any selfies or anything. And I said, Mr. Crockett, you understand? I have no amateur wrestling background. No professional training, He said, yeah, they told me that. And I go, you're good with that. He goes, yep. I go, well, what's next? He goes, be in my office on such and such a day with your head shaved bald. I go, that's it. That's it. See you then. So the day I walked in, introduced myself, he introduced me to Don Kernodle and Ivan Koloff, the world tag team champions. And Nikita Koloff was birthed and born in the hallways of Charlotte, North Carolina. And then for the next 2 or 3 months, I literally had on the job training. I mean, the very next night, they debuted me on television in the Dorton Arena in Raleigh. And then I had what you might call on the job training, where they would teach me, Don and Ivan would teach me the mechanics of wrestling every night before the matches. And then on the drive home, as you're talking, alluding to, we would talk old school psychology of wrestling. So I had a crash course.
Yeah, the mental aspect of it. And you work in heel, Nikita. How long was it you were working heel at first and you were tagging with Ivan and Don? And I guess you guys did some pre-Birds Rule stuff where either of the three of you could defend the tag titles, if I remember right. And how long was it before you worked a singles match? Because as the heel, you know, most of the time you're going to call the match. How long was it before you were comfortable calling the match in the ring?
Well, I mean, initially, I'd say probably the first 6 months, the majority of my matches lasted about 60 seconds,
yeah,
maybe 2 minutes, sometimes against one guy, sometimes in what they call a handicap, where I beat two guys, you know, hit them with the Russian sickle at the same time and pin them both at the same time. But sit in Ivan's corner every night and watch him and Don in their world title defense and then talk about it on the way home. So, like I say, it was a crash course.
Yeah.
Nikita, let's talk about the fact of your character being back then the Cold War, United States versus USSR. Do you have any crazy stories, or can you tell us ones that you can tell on air of like things that happened to you because of the heat that you were getting? It was such a great angle for you and such a great character.
It was. And I mean, and the people, I'll say it this way, bought it hook, line, and sinker. I still fast forward 20, almost 3 decades later, I still run into people who go, where's your accent? Well, you're not really from Russia. I mean, I'm like, read the internet, go on my website, something, and, you know, Google me. But it was hot. It was hotter than hot because it wasn't hard to get USA, USA chant going in the arenas. In fact, I remember one time Ivan would do these interviews, and, you know, we wrestle in Fayetteville where Fort Bragg is, right? The 82nd Airborne. And he'd do these interviews. He goes, we are coming to Fort Bragg. We're coming to, and I want to see all you soldier boys in your yellow dresses in the front row. And I'm like, really, Ivan? Like, really? Like, yellow dresses? Like, really? for the record, they were there. They were front row. They were not wearing yellow dresses. And they let us know real quick that we were number one in their heart, wink, wink. But outside of that, too, I had six different times fans got over the barricade, literally. The very first time, the Great American Bash, 1985, against the Nature Boy Ric Flair, and like you can go watch it on YouTube. And the fan actually got it; he got his hands on me, and I didn't know it was a fan at first. It never happened. And then the cops roll in and get the guy off, and the match continues. But that was one of 6 times that fans came over the barricade, literally coming after me to get me.
Is it okay? It's incredible to think about how, you know, back then kayfabe was still a thing and people believed it, but, you know, particularly fans going after you because you were not I'll be politically correct here. You weren't a chicken crap heel. You were a tough heel. You were a intimidating hoss that ripped people's heads off. So while some fans went after you, I remember as a little kid, I was scared to death of you. There were certain heels that you looked at like the Midnight Express. You were like, man, as a little kid, I was convinced as a little kid I could beat up Jim Cornette. But you know,
and you probably could have, Kyle. Yeah. You probably could have. For the record,
you know, as a heel, you were scary. Yeah. And then when you know the stuff happened with Magnum and the wreck and the face turn, Dusty's decision to turn you. What did you think? I guess even though you had the Russian heel gimmick, there was still guys respected you because you were such a man. You were a tough guy. So what did you think when Dusty approached you about turning face? Did you think it would work?
Well, none of us really knew. In fact, someone asked us years and years later that very question, you know, did you know that it would get over? And he goes, none of us had a clue, but, you know, grateful, thankful the way it did. But no, we never, and I just rested on Dusty's experience and Jim Crockett's experience in all their years combined in wrestling. Thought, well, if they think there's a chance it could work, then why not go for it? Because to my knowledge, I don't know, there'd ever been a good guy, babyface, Russian, you know, and or as hot a heel as I had been back in the day. So crazy.
No, it was an interesting decision back at the time to do it, but it was pure genius because it actually made a lot of sense. You're feuding with Magnum. Magnum can't go anymore. So you had that, you know, I respect Magnum TA. I respect him as an opponent. Now Dusty needs an opponent, and you got the Four Horsemen. And why would Nikita Koloff like the Four Horsemen? I mean, why would he? So there was some logic to it.
Yeah, for sure. And genius is the right word. And Dusty gets all the credit for that. There's many things from the Great American Bash to the War Games to my turn and teaming up and creating the superpowers. He gets credit for all that and much, much more.
Yeah, no doubt.
Nikita, Johnny Gardner, one of our loyal listeners, talked about you mentioning Dorton Arena, and he said he saw you there. What were some of your favorite venues to wrestle?
Well, the Dorton Arena is not one of them, just for the record. Whoever the engineer was that designed that thing should have been fired.
I mean, it is a weird arena.
No, it's not just weird. It is hot in the summertime. I mean, you cannot cool the place. So I mean, I sweat off 10 pounds every match in the summer, and it's freezing cold in the wintertime. You can't heat the place.
Yeah,
so the design is crazy. But that said, a couple places that come to mind. I mean, certainly, you know, the Carolinas, Charlotte. There's so many amazing things happen in Charlotte, that Independence Arena, now called Bojangles Arena. I mean, from the turn of becoming the superpowers to winning the best of seven match against Magnum TA, Charlotte with the first ever Great American Bash, Baltimore, where Dusty and I won the Jim Crockett Cup Tag Team Tournament, the Inner Harbor in Baltimore, Sabatino's, shout out to Sabatino's in Little Italy. Well, we never, if we were in Baltimore, we were going to Sabatino's and get Italian. It was the best food on the planet. And Philadelphia became a favorite. It took us 6 months to educate them on our brand of wrestling. But once we educated them, I mean, guys, we went from the very first match against Ric Flair. I wrestled, I think, a one-hour draw, a Broadway. I think they chanted boring for 55 minutes. But fast forward 6 months later, we wrestled an hour draw, and I don't think they sat down for 60 minutes. So Philadelphia was certainly another one.
Yeah, and one place you didn't mention and obviously goes down in the Carolinas is when people think of wrestling in the Carolinas, the one place everybody thinks
Greensboro,
yeah, Coliseum. Yeah.
Starcade.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Any memories of the Coliseum?
Lots. Yeah, just, I mean, Greensboro was where I dropped the U.S. strap to Luger when Lex came into the territory in the cage. And I guess the turnabout's fair play. You know, J.J. threw him the chair, and so he cheated. And I guess, you know, I cheat a few times? Well, I might have cheated a few times along the way.
You mentioned Sabatino's, and that is so – it seems like anybody who wrestled for Crockett mentioned Sabatino's in Baltimore, and Flair was one of Flair's favorite places. And there was a story I heard. I can't remember who it was from. It might have been from Double A on his podcast. Yeah, about Flair taking off a Rolex, you know, just trying to prove, you know, how Flair was about, you know, how much money he had everything, and he just took a Rolex off and threw it in a Clams casino. Sabatino's. Were you there for that?
Flair did a lot of crazy things, but let me tell you one other quick story on Sabatino's. So I was in Baltimore about maybe three years ago. I was doing a whole weekend of ministry there, a Saturday men's conference. And then they took me to a Baltimore Orioles game that night, but they said, hey, we got a surprise for you. before we went to the Baltimore Orioles ball game, they took me to Sabatino's. I had not been there in like 25 years, and they knew, man, I love Sabatino's. All that to say, the same owners, I mean, one, they recognized me. Two, the sons who now run it were like, you know, infants, you know, little, but man, they wanted pictures out front, the whole deal. And it was like deja vu. It was like going back 25 years, you know, the special room and special treatment. It was incredible.
And Nikita, we're definitely going to get into what you're doing now currently with ministry and how you're a born again Christian. Just wanted to touch on your career a little more, if you don't
mind. Yeah, let's do it.
You obviously had the great run. You were one of, you know, top heel then top babyface. Then I'm going off memory here. Around 88, 89, early 89 maybe, you seemed to disappear, and it seems like I heard it was because your wife had some health concerns.
Yes. So what had happened is she was Mandy was 24 when she was diagnosed with cancer, Hodgkin's cancer. And she decided to go the whole, you know, chemotherapy, radiation treatment at that point, and it went into remission. But then it came back with more of a vengeance. And when it did, that's when I went to up in what we called the Ivory Tower and informed them I'd be taking time off, basically a sabbatical, to take care of her. Which, truthfully, they were not thrilled about that. Obviously, a main event, and they had, you know, invested a lot of time and money in me. But, you know, I just saw that as a priority. Hello, my wife is battling cancer. And so I stepped away, and I told him I'd be back. I said, I will be back, but this is a priority. I have to do this. And so I did step away and took care of her. And unfortunately, she passed at the age of 26. And then I took a, you know, what I would call a period of mourning there, you know, her loss. And then I would eventually step back into WCW in 1991.
Yeah. And obviously tough thing, you know, losing your wife, but before returning to WCW in 91, did you have a run? Again, I'm going off memory. Did you have a run of the AWA, kind of your neck of the woods there in Minnesota?
What I did was, so we were running to compete against Vince McMahon. There were times when we would combine our talents and pool our talents, and like in the Meadowlands, for example, in New Jersey, we'd run the Meadowlands, and we might have Nick Bockwinkel defend his title and Flair defend his title, and we defend the World Tag, and I think the Road Warriors were the AWA World Tag Champions, and so we were combining forces. And kind of, if you want to say, exchanging talent. And right. So it wasn't so much, I was never contracted to the AWA, but what I did is I would go up and do TV tapings for them, wrestle Larry Zbysko at the time, who had the AWA World Heavyweight title, try to help boost their ratings and do a few shows for them. But that was the main thing, was just television tapings for their ratings, and then a few house shows along the way.
And when doing the house shows for the AWA, did you work that their normal? I know at that time it seemed like they were doing their TV in Vegas, but when you did the house shows with their traditional area where you're from in the Minnesota area, and if so, how hard was it to do the gimmick? Did anybody know you or was trying to stooge, you know, off the gimmick up there in the AWA territory?
Well, even when we went up there as the NWA, there would be a few, but you know, for me, so it's fun because. Yeah, there'd be a few people in the audience, you know, would throw out the, you know, the birth name or whatever. Yeah. But I would never respond, react. I would completely ignore it. So you know, just to try to throw them off. So I would never acknowledge it. So occasionally it did happen. But where we did most of those TV tapings was in Rochester, Minnesota. Of course, you know, I was a Minneapolis guy, yeah, and then the suburbs of Minneapolis. So not as many in Rochester might have known me, although we did play some college football games down there, but not too often. I lived, ate, and breathed the gimmick for 3 years after I retired from wrestling, guys. with the accent, the whole deal.
That's awesome. I mean, it's a shame, you know. It's just with the internet like it is, kayfabe is unfortunately dead. But it's so cool back when you were doing it. Everybody loved the gimmick, and I feel like I'm hogging the interview. And I'll ask one thing, and and then kind of turn it over to let the other guys get in some questions. To me, you know, and maybe it was just a timing thing with your wife's unfortunate passing, and I know, you know, it seemed like when you came back, you had lost a few pounds, but at one point you were a monster, and you had that gimmick and you had that look. It is just shocking to me, knowing what Vince likes, that he never reached out to you. Maybe he did, and I just don't know about it. You didn't want to go there, but I could have just pictured, you know, late 80s. I could have pictured him bringing you in as a challenger for heel, another monster for Hogan to try to slay. And it would have worked. Nikita versus Hogan, the real American versus the Russian nightmare. Did you ever have those conversations with Vince? You had to think about it.
Well, honestly, I mean, the magazines obviously were touting the whole Hogan Koloff, WrestleMania possibility. And looking back, I mean, there's no doubt in my mind, like you're saying, that it would have drew money. We might have set records, you know, like him and Andre did in the Pontiac Dome in Detroit. It's all speculation, right? But certainly I feel confident to say we would have probably drew big money. I don't know what would have become of my character after I was fed to Hogan. And that's that's the way I'm going to say it. Because that's essentially what they were doing. They were feeding heels to Hogan. And some of them went on to continue to have pretty decent careers. And others ended up middle of the card, you know. So who knows? I don't know. As far as me entertaining the idea, truthfully, Jim Crockett gave me my break. I like to say, even to this day, I'm NWA for life and been loyal. Anyone who knows me knows I'm kind of loyal to a fault almost. Right. And so, you know, I was loyal to Jim Crockett. I realized I could have went up there, probably made, who knows, again, speculation, but 10 times the money I made in the NWA. But it wasn't all about the money for me. And as far as having any conversations with him, you mentioned Las Vegas. I met him one time in Vegas in the gym when we were going head-to-head shows. This is before the Monday Night Wars. We were going head-to-head. Cordial greeting, you know, exchange of words. It was the only conversation. And I like to say, if they ever reached out to me after that, then I must have missed the voicemail. You know, back in the days, you had the old voice recorder, right? I must have missed the message.
Yeah, and I said a lot. I said I was going to shut up after this. Voice recorder. Turned over to those guys, but you mentioned the Monday Night Wars. So you got injured against Vader early 90s. That's kind of when you hung it up. I don't know how you were physically, but was there ever – did you get the itch during the Monday Night Wars to return to WCW, particularly when, you know, I don't know. If you could have returned during that Goldberg run, how fun would that have been?
It probably would have drew some money, but I guess the answer would be no, there was no itch there, because when I walked away – I mean, I've been kind of coined the Barry Sanders of pro wrestling, right? So right. Here on the Sports Objective, some of the your audience may know what I mean by that. But when I walked away, I walked away, meaning I didn't even see the guys face to face for 3 years after I walked away, nor did I watch it, even turn the television on. I mean, I hadn't had satellite or TV for almost 15 years now. And so I didn't even watch it. I watched none of it. When I walked away, it was a transition time for me, and still stayed connected with a handful of the guys, but was not even current to what was going on. Although I'd hear bits and pieces when I'd be out traveling and going around.
Nikita, Dave. I want to ask you about Uncle Ivan, if you will, one of our loyal listeners and viewers. As we had Dave drop out for a moment, I know, guys, he was battling some connectivity issues, so hopefully he'll be back with us momentarily. But Nikita, back to Ivan. Ivan actually married Alan Powell and his wife Darlene here several years ago. So just give us a glimpse behind the scenes. Talk about Ivan and the type of man he was, and then I have another follow-up question for you.
Ivan is an amazing story, and obviously – you know, for those who are avid wrestling fans, they know he beat the legendary Bruno Sammartino in Madison Square Garden. And you want to talk about heat. They almost had a riot that night. In fact, they couldn't even give him the belt in the ring. They had to wait to present the belt to him in the hallway, you know, in the hallways in back for his own safety. And then, of course, you know, he went on from there, and him and I had a great run together, and he extended his career. And then, you know, people ask, well, is he really your uncle? And I go, well, he was as much an uncle to me as any uncle I ever had. And we went on to become the best of friends, even post, you know, my career, post career, all the way up to the time of his passing, when his wife Renee asked if I would speak at a very small, discreet graveside gathering. So that was an incredible honor. And I'd be remiss if I didn't tell this part that, and I know we'll probably get into a little bit more of this, but I had invited him in 1995, knowing his previous life and lifestyle, which is no secret. I mean, if you pick up a copy of his book, you'll read about it, or he used to talk about it. And that was his alcohol, drug addiction, tobacco addiction, all kinds of addictions that he had. And I invited him in 1995 to a revival, and he came, and I didn't know he was there till I saw him at the altar. And he had a life transforming encounter there at the altar, where from that day forward, he was completely set free of all the addictions I just mentioned, as well as more, went on to become an ordained minister. Yep. And used to marry people. Wow. And so just an amazing story all the way around, and an amazing man at the, you know, the last period of his life.
Now, Ivan was a chewer, right? You mentioned tobacco. If I remember right, Ivan was not a smoker. He liked to chew tobacco, correct?
He was a chewer, man. Yeah, he just a pinch between his cheek and gums. Yep.
That's what I thought. Bubby, you said you had a follow-up.
I did. You know, obviously there are plenty of things, and you referenced the time on the road and, you know, traveling around the nation. But just talk about, share a road story or two that you can share on the air.
Well, yeah, I mean, again, so we have talked a little bit about his past, right? I'm not a drug guy, right? Like I've never done, you know, I've never smoked dope. I've never snorted cocaine. I mean, that's not my story, right? I'm not a drinker, never liked the taste of alcohol. Not that I didn't drink a beer or have a drink. I just never acquired a taste for it. But Ivan loved to smoke dope, right? Especially after the matches. And him and Carnoto both. And man, I'd be in the back seat, the two of them be in the front seat. I'd be like, if you can picture, I'd be like a dog with the window down with my head stuck out the window. I don't care how cold it was, just so I wouldn't have to smell the dope. Or I couldn't stand it. And so I'd have my nose out the window, or I'd have my head out the window sometimes, again, depending on how warm it was or cold it was. And there was one time we were coming, it was just him and I, and we were coming down from the matches up in West Virginia, and we were and the fog, and it said like fog area, right? It get like, and it was late at night. You couldn't even see the dashes on the road. I mean, and he's driving. I was insane to let him behind the wheel, but he was driving, and he's barreling down the mountain, and I don't even know how fast you're going. I had the death grip on the front on the front dashboard, and I'm like, Ivan, you want me to drive? He's like, no, I'm good. He barely had his eyes open. He had his head tilted back, and all I could see is the slit of his eyes. And I'm like, he's gonna kill us. I'm done. I'm dead. I'm dead. Thankfully, I guess God's angels were watching over us, because we got home, and I don't think I was. I don't think I ever let him get behind the wheel in that condition ever again.
And y'all are singing John Denver, "Country Roads, Take Me Home."
Yeah. I was like, well, yeah, I wasn't even a praying man, but I was praying that night.
Nikita, you mentioned that, you know, Ivan and Don Canoodle liking to smoke marijuana. Now, you being the young guy in the back seat, did they you didn't smoke, but did they make you roll the joints for them?
Nope. I wouldn't even touch the stuff. That's the irony, man. Like back in high school, even back to junior high, you know, I mean, I was raised, it was, the irony is I was raised to like, just hate that. Just hate it. And here I get stuck with two guys who loved it. And yeah, it was a challenge for me, but I lived up to the challenge.
You took one for the team, didn't you, Nikita?
I took one for the team. Yes, coach.
Nikita, you post wrestling. You find God. Tell your story about how you became a born again Christian and found God and decided to get into ministry.
Yeah, I mean the elevator version of that. Of course, you know, obviously, if people want to know more of the story, you know, we can. It's in book form. It's on my, you know, some of it's on my website. But the Reader's Digest version of that is, you know, I have this meteoric career, if you will, you know, in wrestling and travel all over the world, went to places I never dreamed in a million years. Like many things in my life, there's a stuff I've done, you know, that I'm like, in a million years, I never dreamed I would be doing that or would have done that. But opportunities presented themselves, like the wrestling. And so I have this career in wrestling. I walk away under my own terms. You mentioned, you know, getting injured with Vader. That was not career ending for the record. Some have asked me about that. I did get injured, two injuries, injured my neck. He injured my neck that night. He had a reputation of being reckless, Big Van Vader. And then, you know, he was a legit 450, 500 pounds. And I didn't know until the next day I had a hernia. So I had hernia surgery, rehabilitating my neck. And it was at that point over Thanksgiving, Christmas holiday that I'm like, I'm done. And I'd actually set a goal of walking away by the time I was 35. And so I was 33, just getting ready to turn 34 when I made that decision. Wow. To bronze the boots and walk away in the prime of my career, right? And looking back, without question, and according to Lex Luger, I walked away from millions and millions of dollars, but no regrets. So go back to 1993. Now I've left wrestling. I'm looking at my life, and I'm wondering what's the future hold for Nikita Koloff. I had met a Christian couple through business, other business ventures. I didn't grow up in church. Just like if your audience hasn't figured it out, I'm not really from Russia. Just in case you're still wondering, right? So I didn't grow up in Russia. I didn't grow up in church. But I was in this on this quest, if you will, of searching for what was next for Nikita Koloff. And I like to say, I say this in one of my books, Wrestling with Success. I was successful, but I was unfulfilled. Even though I climbed the pinnacle of success, became a world champion multiple times, I was unfulfilled. And lo and behold, just came the day that I called that couple and said, I'll be in church on Sunday. They met me there, 17 October 1993, and I'm sitting in that service. An invitation is given, and it was my aha moment. In other words, meaning I know what's missing in my life. He's offering a relationship with Jesus Christ, and I don't have that. I've never surrendered my life to him. I was the first to the altar, 1993, 17 October, on my knees, and I encountered Jesus that day, and I went instantaneously from the sense of an unfulfilled life to immediately feeling this sense of fulfillment. And little did I know, fast forward all these years later, again, I wasn't looking for this. Now I've preached and ministered in 1,200 plus or minus churches. I've been to 30 different countries. I have a podcast called Man Up Podcast. It centers around Christian values, and it's just been a surreal journey for me. That's the shorter version of it.
And Nikita, you mentioned going to different churches and speaking. How has that been during this COVID time? Is that something you've still been doing less of it? How has that been during this weird time where people haven't been going to church until recently?
Yeah, that part's been interesting too, because from March of 2020, you know, I felt like the Lord gave me a vision for 2020, really for the decade of the 20s. And where he said, you know, if you go back 100 years, it was the roaring 20s, right? And I feel like he said, no, you're not gonna roar in this decade. You're gonna soar. I mean, you're just gonna soar, and you're gonna do things you never dreamed of. I'm like, all right. And then boom, that hits in March of 2020. And for about a 4.5 month window, everything from autograph signings, you know, like legend signings to to camps and conferences and things that I would normally or typically be doing all went away, right? I mean, so but in turn, what happened from that is I wrote about 7 or 8 new chapters for my last book, My Life Story, Nikita, A Tale of the Ring and Redemption. And the radio show and the podcast was birthed out of that time. But then in about August of 2020, doors began opening in churches, and my schedule began to fill up for the remainder of that year and even the first quarter of this year, all the way now into November. Man, I've got conferences and camps and speaking engagements, motivational, inspirational, legends to autograph signings, virtual signings. It's unreal. I mean, it's unbelievable. My calendar is slam full.
And if people want to get your books, you mentioned 2 books. And if they want to book you, for lack of a better term, for a church speaking engagement or find out about your podcast, where can they go?
They just go koloff.net, koloff, KOLOFF.net. There's actually a link to the podcast. There's a link to my shirt I'm wearing here. It says Man Camp. That's another story in itself. Lex Luger and I co-facilitate this camp called Man Camp. We'll do one in just 2 weeks. We'll have, I think, about 36 guys from 10 different states who are flying in and driving in. And we're just going to spend 5 days, and we're just going to deep dive into the Word of God and just go after the heart of God. Lex is an amazing story in his own right. 2006, after his last jail time, April 23rd, 2006, found himself on his knees with his jail chaplain, surrendering his life to the Lord. I began to disciple him. We began to do ministry together the last now, whatever, 14, 15 years. And now we do these camps together called Man Camp. And there's a link on koloff.net for the camp, for the podcast, and then a store where they can purchase the books.
How is Lex doing physically? I know saw him in some pictures. And did something happen with him on an airplane? Or I don't remember the story.
Yeah. In fact, your audience, go on YouTube and YouTube 700 Club Lex Luger, and you'll hear a short, you know, short version of his story. But and I don't know that the doctors ever fully diagnosed what totally happened, but long and short of it is, on a flight to San Francisco for an autograph signing, essentially his body short-circuited, his nervous system left him paralyzed from the neck down. He was supposed to be that way the rest of his life, you know, lifted out of a bed, fed, bathed, you know, shaved, the whole deal. And he's a miracle, really. He's honestly a miracle. He walked out of the Shepherd Spinal Center under his own power, which like 0.001% ever do. He's truly a miracle. And he has never fully recovered, and he lost about 100 pounds of that muscle mass you'd see back in the day. But he'd tell you right now, he's healthier than he's ever been. And part of his story is God had to strip him of that muscle suit to let him know he didn't need that in order to be an effective minister of the gospel. It's a phenomenal story.
No doubt. Dave, did you have anything for Nikita?
Come on, Dave.
I think we might have some lag on Dave's end. Yeah, I think we have some lag on Dave's end, Nikita.
Oh, bummer. All right.
So koloff.com is where everybody can go.
Koloff.net.
Koloff.net. Do not go to koloff.com. Koloff.net.
There's Dave. There's Dave.
Dave, are you with us? Dave's not.
Just I don't know what's going on. My internet tonight. Perfect. You have Nikita Koloff.
Kyle, you seen that commercial? I'm trying to remember what the commercial is for. I'm guessing maybe internet, but remember in that commercial, this on the air a lot now and talking about you finally have the chance to meet your hero, your idol, and then your internet screws up.
Well, that just means you guys will have to have me back again sometime. That's all that means.
Absolutely. So Koloff.net is where everybody can go to find out about your ministry work. They want to book you
I'm for here.
Church.
Come Dave, on, Dave. Throw a question out there.
Dave, did you say that about 30 seconds ago?
All right.
Bubba, pick up the slack, Bubba. Come on, pick up the slack, Bubba.
Kyle obviously can't because Kyle's struggling to compose himself at the moment. But no, Nikita, we really appreciate your time this evening. You've been very generous, and like you just mentioned, we look forward to having you back on down the road.
Hey, it was I appreciate your guys' flexibility. It was great. I just drove in literally from – I was visiting with my grandchildren, my children from several of them live in Nashville, Tennessee, and then one, I say, suffering for Jesus over in Maui, Hawaii. But
wow.
I hit the most traffic I think I've ever hit in all my years of travel. And I was rerouted, I think, three different times to get home. But I'm glad it all worked out. It's great to be on the Sports Objective. It's wonderful to be with you guys. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Nikita. It was great talking to you. And I'm not scared of you anymore.
Hey, Well, I'm grateful for that. You're one of many that has said that to me over and over. Go, you scared me to death as a kid. I'm so sorry. Don't let me. I don't want to scare you now. So
hey, anyway. That was your job.
You do it. I'm coming for you, Kyle. I'm coming for you.
Absolutely. Appreciate it, Nikita. Take care.
All right. Thanks, guys. God bless everyone. Have a great night. Thanks so much.
Thank you. And as I was saying, go to Koloff.net if you want to book him for your church, buy some merchandise, get his books, or listen to his podcast.
Well, Kyle, it's just you and I as Dave continues to battle his connectivity issues. a couple more things before we go ahead and wrap this up. We're already a little over an hour. And, we generally like to keep it to around an hour or less for our listeners' sake. But, taking a look at things, Kyle, Major League Baseball today out in Texas, in Arlington specifically, at the new ballpark for the Texas Rangers, they were 100% capacity. And I think they had a little over 38,000 to be exact.
Yeah, I don't know what the Rockies did the other day, but it looked pretty damn near full there. If they weren't 100%, they must have been 75%. Or they had it sold out 50%.
Yeah, fingers crossed that everything goes well there. It's awesome to see full capacity, at least able to have full capacity. I think that ballpark seats right around 40,000, so they weren't quite there. But they could have been had they been able to do so. In addition to that, a couple other things. You had Alec Makarevich, who we talked about last night. He was our PGX.com Player of the Week. PGXGloves.com, excuse me, Player of the Week. He once again was named to another award today, a little more prestigious, but he was named the AAC Player of the Week. And then you also had Gavin Williams, who was right there. We decided to go with Garrett Saylor because of his excellent relief effort where he struck out 8 in 4 innings of relief in game 1 of that Cincinnati series. But we could have very easily given it to Gavin Williams, who struck out 13 in 6 2/3 in the Pirates 7-0 win against the Bearcats in game 2 of that series. And then last but certainly not least.
Well, wait one second. I just got word that Makarevich has received another Player of the Week honor. He was shirtless Player of the Week. So congratulations to Makarevich for that.
Well played, Kyle. Well played. And then in addition to that, Dave is here. Rejoin us one moment. He added himself back in. So now I accidentally removed him. All right. And now Senior Richmond is with us. Welcome back to the program, Dave. I was just about to transition to Sam Darnold. The Panthers traded for Sam Darnold. A lot had been speculated as far as what direction the Carolina Panthers would go. If if Teddy Bridgewater would be the quarterback in 2021. And it looks like Sam Darnold will be a Carolina Panther. He is a Carolina Panther. And the Carolina Panthers gave up three draft picks, one this year in the sixth round, and in second and fourth round draft picks in 2022 to acquire Sam Darnold from the New York Jets.
Yeah, big news for the Panthers. Got their quarterback, and we'll see where that goes.
Go ahead and chime in, Dave. Yeah,
that was a big thing.
Are you with us?
All right, and that was Dave.
Well, Kyle, we appreciate Dave's effort to rejoin the show, but we'll go ahead and wrap this up. And as Dave likes to say, I'll use his phrase, put this podcast to bed. You know, Pirate football has been on pause, and hopefully they'll be able to resume action this week. And we'll have some more Pirate football to talk about later on this week. For Kyle Barber and Dave Richmond, I'm Bubba Rosenbaum, and you've been watching and listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Have a great week, everyone.